the Company, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, streaming live on Twitter, Twitch, YouTube, and Facebook Live, live from the Spring Hill Heating and Cooling Studios. The Predators last night captured their 18th straight game with a point. I want to say 18th straight victory. They haven't won in 18 straight, but it feels like they've won in 18 straight, but they have gotten a point in 18 straight games. It is amazing to me. 18 games is 22% of an 82-game season. That is a fourth of the year that the Predators have gotten a point in the last month and a half or however long it's been. And there was something I asked Barry Trotz about yesterday on the program, which was something that I had noticed in the Detroit game, which is this team, when this all started, the St. Louis road trip and the victory there and the canceled extra days in Vegas and the trip where they beat Vegas on the road, and then they beat L.A., and then they beat San Jose, and then they beat Anaheim, and then they came back, and they beat Ottawa, and they beat Minnesota. They just went on a heater. And what happened was, when they lost 9-2 to Dallas on that Thursday night, Roman Josi talked to the media, Ryan McDonagh talked to the media, and they both talked about how unacceptable the performance was and how it was time for the team to finally get it together, that it was time because the season was on the line that Saturday going to St. Louis. And on that road trip, that team played like losing was not an option. And normally when teams have their backs against the walls, especially the Predators, over the last handful of years, they seem to always find a way to win. Peter Laviolette used to talk about that in the playoffs. Whichever team plays more desperate is the team that's going to win. And so when the Predators went on a heater and then they got to the trade deadline and they beat Colorado and they could look at themselves in the mirror and say, we're contenders, I understood that, hey, this team's pretty good. But I also know that in sports, you can't always ride the high every game, can you? And yet, that's exactly what they've done. I wasn't surprised by the effort and intensity with which they played last Thursday night at Florida against a team that was the betting favorite to win the Stanley Cup. I was surprised that they had the exact same level of intensity and will to win on Saturday against Detroit. And then last night, they did not bring their A game at the beginning, whether it was rust on a guy like Lazan coming back into the lineup, or whether it was a bad play by Luke Shen here, or they hit a couple of posts there, or whatever. They found themselves down 3-0, and then there was a bad call, or a bad non-call, I should say, on what I thought was kind of a holding of the stick of Lazan on the fourth goal, and yet this team refused to lose. Even the goal that put them back in the game, which was the Forsberg goal in which Jason Zucker made an incredible, you know, a strong effort play right at the front of the net, and he wasn't able to get it through the goaltender, but Forsberg, with the effort to follow from behind it, poked it in. That was a play of will. That wasn't a play of talent. I know Philip Forsberg's got a lot of it. He just scored 40 goals again, but that goal was not a talent goal. That was an effort goal, just like his game winner on Saturday. This team just refuses to lose. And everybody always wants a team that refuses to lose, but it is so hard to have one. It is so hard to find a group of players in baseball, basketball, football, hockey, whatever, that every night they show up and the intensity is at least an 8 out of 10. It's hard, but it's not impossible. And in order to do it, you've got to have a team that wants to be there. You have to have a team that is dedicated to each other, that literally wakes up in the morning and thinks, I get to go to the rink, I get to play with these teammates, I get to, and we know not everybody's like that. I can promise you the Ottawa Senators aren't waking up at 7 o'clock in the morning and saying, I get to go to the rink today. But that's what this group is doing. Barry Trotz was on our show yesterday. I said, how is it that this team seems to never quit? This team seems to bring it every night. And I mean, how is this even possible?
I think the group found joy in competing every night and preparing to compete and then performing on the ice. Because I go downstairs, you know, in the mornings and check on things there and what have you. And when teams are pushing and there's pressure, it's usually quiet, and they, you could just feel the tension, you know. And this group is loose. They're having fun. They understand that there's a standard, I guess, and they've accepted that standard. They haven't fought that standard, which is the reason I think that they're having fun and winning is because they've accepted that standard, and they go, you know what? If we put the work in, it's fun. Competing's fun. Mm-hmm. Winning's fun.
That's the thing. That's what they've realized. And so all the buzzwords, right, all of the intangibles that really define championship teams, everybody's got good players in every sport because the worst teams get the best draft picks. They split TV revenue. So everybody's got good players. The difference is some have elite players, but also some have those intangibles. Culture, chemistry, integrity. This team has those things. That's what makes them different. That's why they refuse to lose. Everybody wants to build a good culture. Everybody on their opening press conference talks about building a culture. Mike Vrabel said a lot of things when he was the coach of the Titans, but one thing that really stood out to me was early in his tenure, he was asked about culture. And he said, culture doesn't matter when you're winning. Culture matters when you're losing. When things aren't going well, that's when guys start to point fingers. That's when guys get upset. That's when guys don't want to be at the rink. That's when guys, what happened when they were losing? Roman Josi and Ryan McDonagh got up and said, we have to play better. He didn't say they have to play better. He didn't say guys on our team, they're not. He said we have to play better. Barry Trotz didn't just punish the guys that weren't performing. He punished the whole group by taking away the Vegas trip. And that's what has built this culture for this team, is that everybody's on the same page. Everybody is pushing in the right direction. And so last night, when you've got a game where you're down 3-0, where one guy makes a mistake and it ends up in the back of the net, where another guy makes a mistake and it ends up in the back of the net, where all of a sudden you're playing a team, the defending cup champions, they're skating up and down the ice, it's unbelievable, and you don't quit at 3-0, and you don't quit at 4-1, that isn't a talent win. Plus, you don't have more talent than Vegas. They have better players than you. That's a culture win. That's the kind of win that, again, I remember 2017. And I hate everybody always comparing everything to 17. Because, again, we know how that story ended. It's like when the Titans traded for L'Jarius Sneed and fans on Twitter are like, when's the last time we had corners like this? And I was like, I remember people said the same thing with Malcolm Butler, Logan Ryan, and Adoree Jackson. Well, that group, Jared, they weren't. No, no, no. You know how that story ends. That's why you dismiss it. And I don't like comparing anything to the 17 Predators because we know how that story ends. So it's like, oh, my God, it was so great. It was so this. It was so that. It was so. But that wasn't really how I felt about the team at the time or anything like that. But in that playoff run, that team just glued together. And you could tell every single one of those guys wanted to be at the rink. And you could tell that every single one of those guys wanted to play for each other. And you could tell that every single one of those guys wanted to win for each other, including guys that, quite frankly, you know, sometimes I thought didn't bring the greatest team efforts around, like Ryan Ellis or P.K. Subban or, you know, some other guys, and they did it anyways. I mean, it's, and I'm going to tell you, like, this is a culture win. Yesterday, Barry talked about adding players and deleting players, which I thought was a really odd term for a GM to use, but I kind of liked it. He's talking about Johansson and Duchesne. I deleted them. And I know Duchesne's got 24 goals in Dallas. It doesn't matter. Matt Duchesne was not a culture fit for what this team's trying to do. If you have Matt Duchesne on your team, you don't win last night. That's the point. And when you sign up for Barry Trotz, and see, this is what's happened in sports with all the analytics gurus, is that everybody wants to quantify everything. Everybody wants the answer ahead of time. Everybody wants to know. Everybody wants to have some sort of objective formula that tells you everything as far as, you know, from a binary standpoint as to whether or not you're going to win or whether or not you're going to lose or whatever. But when you sign up for Barry Trotz, you're not going to get that. Because Barry Trotz never coached like that. Because things like heart and effort and intensity and is your head in the right place and are you a good teammate and chemistry, and that's what matters to him. And so I don't know what the analytics say about last night in Vegas and how good they were and how fast they were. You know, here, I want to pull up moneypuck.com because they always have the deserve to win meter. And I'm not saying that I didn't think the Predators were going to lose at any point last night, because I definitely thought that they were going to lose last night. But I do wonder, you know, what the deserve to win meter ended up being last night as far as the Predators were concerned. And I bet it wasn't very good. Actually, the deserve to win meter said the Predators deserve to win 56. I can't. This is bull crap. There's no way the Predators deserve to win 56% there. So take that for what you want. This was a culture win. And I got to tell you, that gives me hope that this team could be pretty good. 615-737-1025 is our phone number, 615-737-1025. Stillman and Company, 1025-1063 The Game. And let me tell all the fine folks, score big this spring with Lee Company and the Nashville Predators in the 10K Power Play Giveaway. Enter for a chance to win a Kohler home generator or $10,000 towards Lee Company Home Services. That's right, a Kohler home generator or $10,000 towards Lee Company Home Services. That's Lee Company .com/giveaway to enter. Again, leecompany.com/giveaway for the 10K Power Play Giveaway. Contest entries are accepted until Saturday, April 20th. Lee Company, all you need. By the way, I have a hot take. I have got a Preds smoking hot take. And trust me, I know some of you guys think I don't believe that. This one hit me last night during the game. And I'm going to bust out this smoking hot take. We'll do it next. Stillman & Company, 1025-1063 The Game.
Holding coming out, being watched very closely by Theodore. They give the puck back now to Josi, cutting in. He scores! Roman Josi scores! And the Predators now are 18 games into an unbeaten streak. Oh my! 5-4 the final.
So it hit me last night at the game. You know, Forsberg has the big goal. They kind of, you know, puts them back in it at 4-3, and then they go on the power play, and of course, Yossi's on the power play, and Forsberg's on the power play, and Gus Nyquist ends up scoring. And now it's 4-4. And then in overtime, it's Josi, Forsberg, and O'Reilly. And I'd like to think that given the way 3-on-3's played, that might be, like, the best three you can put out on the ice for 3-on-3 overtime. Like, they all can handle things in their own end. They're all okay defensively. They can all score. They've all, you know, O'Reilly's the worst skater of the group, and he's a pretty good skater. You know, I mean, like, he's a, I mean, and is a great two-way player. But anywho, it hit me last night at the game, and I know people are going to disagree with this, and I know Pekka-Rinne's got a statue, but Philip Forsberg and Roman Josi have been the models of consistency as far as good player, never causing any problems, always kind of in the middle of when the team's successful, it's always about them. And they kind of, the entire group, they're great leaders. Like, the kind of, the group thrives on them. And as much as Pekka-Rinne was a good player, which he was, and Shea Weber was a good player, which he was, it seems to me that, like, the models of consistency and production are those two. And I said to somebody I was at the game with last night, I said, I think Josi and Forsberg, when all is said and done, are going to be the Steve McNair and Eddie George of the Predators. Like, the Titans have had other good players, and the Predators have had other good players. And Pekka-Rinne is certainly a good player, just like Derrick Henry was a great Titan. I think we can all agree. Apparently, everybody except for Al Smith thinks the Titans should retire number 22. If the Titans put somebody out there next year wearing 22, I'm going to go crazy. But again, when we talk about the gold standard of the Titans, I think Derrick Henry's the best player ever played for the Titans. But again, when we talk about kind of the gold standard of the Titans, the era, It's always the Steve McNair and Eddie George era. And those two are the two most popular players in the history of the Titans. And I think that when all is said and done, I think that Yossi and Forsberg are going to be remembered the same way. I think that they are the two guys that have always been here through the elite success that the organization has had. They've been here. And I think that, again, we talk about culture and success and, you know, the intangibles and leadership. And when this team needs it, they rely on those two guys. And they should, because those two guys make the most money. And that's why you always ask those guys, hey, man, you know, you guys have got to step up. What's the old saying, Ian? Pay what you owe.
That's right.
Those guys do it every year. That's why early in the season when the team wasn't playing well and I didn't think Yossi was playing particularly well, I was going crazy. And people were like, oh, Yossi's 5-on-5 Corsi stats say that he's actually doing okay and that he's not doing great, but he's okay. And it's a, I don't give a rat's ass. This is Roman freaking Yossi. Like, I want elite because I know it's there. And then when I get elite out of Roman Yossi, my team doesn't lose. And I'm convinced that, again, no disrespect to Pekka, no disrespect to Shea Weber. I don't really think that there would be anybody else in this discussion, right? Like, if we're talking about the greatest predators of all time, I think that's probably the four, and there's probably a large gap before you get to number five. Unless you have an objection?
No, not really.
Who would you say is number five?
It's a good question. I'd have to go back and think about that for a minute.
I think it's probably Saros.
You think so? It could
probably be.
Yeah, it could be.
I mean, like, David Legwon, no.
I mean, do you count Paul Kariya? Like,
no, because those guys, they were here for 1 year. Those guys
He was here for longer than a year, but Paul Kariya was very talented as far as overall talented players.
Like, those guys were like hired guns. Like, those guys aren't predators.
Like Peter Forsberg, you know, I can't count that, but Kariya is a little bit more borderline. Steve Sullivan was up there.
Yeah, but you wouldn't put Steve Sullivan ahead of Yossi Saros.
No, probably not.
Wouldn't put David Legwon ahead of him.
No, I don't think so. I don't think
Wouldn't
I could.
Wouldn't put Tomas Vokoun ahead of him.
No. Suter. It would be close.
But everybody hates him.
Yeah, but he turned out to be really good.
I mean, he can't be on the list of, like, you know, the fan, like this, you know, again, we're talking like Steve McNair, Eddie George, Derrick Henry, Philip Forsberg, Roman Yossi, Pekka Rinne. You can't be on this list if that the entire fan base hates you. I mean, I would guess the argument, if you're going to, I think Mike Fisher might probably go in there, like him and Yossi, or him and Saros in that kind of fifth spot. But Fisher was more of like a, like,
heart and soul guy.
Yeah, he wasn't like a production guy like those dudes were.
Yeah.
So I'm just telling you, I think that, I really think that these are the two best players to ever play for the Predators. And that these dudes, you know, it doesn't matter. You could pay them $100 million and they would play hard every night. And you could pay them $1 million, and they would play hard every night. These guys are awesome. And I think what's happened is they were always good. Even with Hines as the coach, they were good. But I think that this coach has unlocked, between, like, O'Reilly and the coach, I think they have unlocked another gear in these dudes. And that's why, while I don't think that you have that big boy forward to go up against Connor McDavid, I'm like, you know, maybe between those two, you can kind of equal one great elite player that if you end up in a playoff series with an Edmonton, yeah, they've got, you know, their, well, I mean, I still don't think he'd beat Edmonton, but let's say Vancouver, Pettersson. And it's like, yeah, they've got Elias Pettersson, but you've got Forsberg and Yossi. And I think that Steve McNair was never the same without Eddie George, and I think that Eddie George was a big part of Steve McNair. And so that's how I feel about these two. I think these two guys, I'll never forget when the Atlanta Braves won their 14th straight division title when I was a kid. Now, obviously, huge Braves fan. And John Smoltz was the closer, you know, because he had been starting, and then he had the elbow surgeries, and he went to closer. And the Braves had won their 14th straight title, and Smoltz is on the mound. And when they won it, you know how usually the catcher and the pitcher, they jump up and down, and then everybody joins kind of the pile. Smoltz ran right over to Chipper Jones, and they embraced in a big hug. And I'm like, that's like, to me, that's what I'm talking about here. And that's what Yossi and Forsberg are. Boy, the text line is popping now. And again, a lot of people are, oh my God, a lot of people are trying to sit here and talk about how great Mike Fisher was. I mean, Mike Fisher was good, but again, like, oh, UC Soros, like, from a statistical standpoint, has been elite. Mike Fisher was never elite. So I'm going to go, again, as far as I, you know, this is, well, remember when they inducted David Poile into the Golden Hall, or I think that's what they're calling it, the team's Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, who belongs in the team's Hall of Fame? Pekka, Shea Weber, Yossi Forsberg, Trotz. Anybody else? Do you think Soros has done enough to be in the team's Hall of Fame?
Maybe not yet.
Would you put David Legwon in the team's Hall of Fame?
Yeah.
Would you?
I think I probably would. Yeah.
I was always disappointed by David Legwon.
I mean, did he live up to the second overall pick? Probably not as you had hoped. But, I mean, he played his entire career, and he still leads the team or franchise and whatever.
Nah, Forsberg's passed him.
I guess maybe just games played.
But would you put Fisher in there?
Be pretty close, yeah. I would consider it, yeah.
Would you put Laviolette in there?
Probably not yet, no.
So I would put Laviolette in before I'd put David Legwon in. Laviolette won!
Yeah.
But again...
They didn't win the cup.
Some of you guys in the text line, Dylan says that P.K. Subban wasn't here long enough, but no, P.K. is not in the team's Hall of Fame.
No, can't do that.
One texter says, you've always wanted a big boy forward. Has Philip Forsberg evolved into that? I think he might be the big boy guy. I mean, watch Austin Matthews play, then watch Forsberg play. And I don't mean to like take anything away from Forsberg, but like, doesn't Matthews have something like 65 goals right now?
I think he has 60 goals, yeah.
Here's how good McDavid and Draisaitl are. The guy that plays with them just scored 50 goals last night.
Yeah, Hyman. He's right. Got 52.
So, like, I think Forsberg's, like, at the same level as Sam Reinhart. And that's still, I mean, like, those are freaking good players. But I'm not sure I'd say, like, big boy forward. All right, Fitz joins us next. 615-737-1025 here on the program. I want Fitz's thoughts because he's got no skin in the game. I want Fitz's thoughts on L'Jarius Sneed and the little amount that the Chiefs got in return for him, and if that adds up at all. We'll do that next. By the way, Brent says, what about the Pred Scarbini Club? Boy, I could go all day about that one. Stillman & Company, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Stillman & Company. So apparently Paul Kaharsky has said that L'Jarius Sneed passed his physical. So if L'Jarius Sneed has passed his physical, then why has L'Jarius Sneed not signed with the Tennessee Titans? Right? Like, isn't the physical kind of the most important thing? Like, when the trade was agreed to on Friday night, the Titans sending a 2025 third-round pick to the Kansas City Chiefs. In exchange, the Kansas City Chiefs sending over L'Jarius Sneed, who's a really, really good player. I mean, it should be noted that he's never been to a Pro Bowl or he's not an All-Pro, but I'm not sure... Yeah, I know what good players are, and he's a good player. So, L'Jarius Sneed gets sent to the Titans, and then we know what the money is. Yesterday, Ian Rappaport reported the terms of the contract like it was something new, but what I did think was important was the signing bonus, because it's a $20 million signing bonus. I have no idea what the cash in year one's going to be. My guess is we're probably looking at a $3 million salary, $4 million salary, something like that. But at the same time, the reason that he would want a big signing bonus is because then that means that no matter what waivers they get on the knee or whatever they do about all of that, then he'll still get at least that much of the money up front. Let's say again that they're giving him a $4 million salary this year and a $20 million signing bonus. That means that he would be getting $24 million in cash of a $55 million guarantee. So that means that he's pretty much halfway there to his guarantees, even if the knees go out on him in year one, and then the Titans have a way of avoiding the deal. to me, there's something that's going on here, and I don't know what that is. And I just think, again, we talk about this all the time on the radio show, which is the duck theory. If it looks like a duck, it quacks like a duck, chances are it's probably a duck. And I think many of you guys, oftentimes in your life, try to, sometimes you think about things too much to where you're like, wait a minute, hold up. This really could be this instead of that, and it could be, and I'm like, guys, remember the duck theory. So with Snead, he's a really good player. Nobody's questioning that. Okay. Really good players don't go for third-round picks in the next year's draft. It's as simple as that. A contending team, and the Chiefs we know are contending. They just won a Super Bowl, and they won a Super Bowl by the thinnest of margins. A contending team does not give away a player for free that is a really good player, especially when they've let it be known to everybody that they're willing to trade him away. They let everybody know, we're willing to trade away L'Jarius Sneed, and because they're willing to trade him away, everybody could have made an offer, and who made an offer? We hear the Colts, maybe. But it wasn't better than the Titans' offer because, again, the Titans' offer got him, and that's a third-round pick in next year's draft. So then Snead gets a big contract. But just because he gets a big contract, that's what good players get. So if he's a good player, he should expect to get $19 million or something like that, which he got. And yet the deal's not done yet, and nobody wanted to trade for him, and Kansas City didn't want to give him a deal. I don't understand this. Somebody help me out here. So to me, this has to be about the knees. And so I think that there's something to this. So 615-737-1025. I still am just, I'm wondering when the Snead deal is going to drop. Like, I wonder when it's going to come down and when it's going to pop in. And then we'll never hear, because, again, this always comes from the agents, but we'll never know what it is that ended up being the reason why he went for so little. Because let's say they end up getting a waiver. The agent is never going to come out and say, oh, yeah, we signed a waiver because his knees are so bad that the Titans won't be on the hook for the guaranteed money if this happens or doesn't happen. Jason Fitz joins us now in the program. Fitz, I got a question for you, which is when it comes to L'Jarius Sneed and the Titans, the deal's not done yet. It was reported on Friday. It's Wednesday. Kaharski says he's passed his physical. I'm skeptical given the price the Titans had to pay in order to get him. And the fact that nobody else wanted him and the Chiefs didn't want to extend him, I am skeptical about these knees with Snead. What have you heard?
Nothing that makes me think the deal isn't going to happen. I think your skepticism is fair. I will say that, like, because realistically, Snead, they could have kept him. They could have figured out ways to keep him for one more year. I thought the move was surprising on the Chiefs' standpoint. If I'm Patrick Mahomes, I'm not particularly pleased about it. And frankly, knowing that if he leaves in a year, they would be likely to get a compensatory pick for him anyway. I just thought it was unusual to me that the Chiefs moved on from him. So I also think it is strange. I think you're fair to say it is strange that we have not heard any finalization. We haven't heard anything on the contract being finalized. Like, these are all weird things to me. So, and I don't like it when a transaction starts off weird. That's the easiest way to say it. Like, I lived the Jimmy G contract with the Raiders. Started off weird because of a physical issue and everybody tried to deny it. And then it turned out to be a foot issue that made him a shell of himself anyway. So, like, when these things are delayed and when the numbers aren't out from officially from everybody, there's usually an issue. So I think it's concerning, but nobody's saying anything in any circle I'm in.
So when it comes to the Snead thing and he went for a third round pick in next year's draft, shouldn't a team like the Chiefs just try to win the Super Bowl again instead of collecting a third round pick in the next year's draft?
Yes. I mean, I think it was a terrible move by the Chiefs. I don't understand the third-round pick aspect of it because, you know, let's also go back to what the Chiefs are, who the Chiefs are. They won this year because their defense played their butts off, and we know that. And part of the reason they went all in on keeping Chris Jones in the building because it gave him the best shot at a three-peat. So I've asked our insiders, Charles Robinson, I know, comes on with you guys every week also. I keep trying to get my head wrapped around why, if you're all in on paying Chris Jones all that money, why would you just let L'Jarius Sneed walk for essentially nothing? And you can tell me that there's replacement value in the building, but I have a hard time believing that, even if you think you have somebody that can step in and play for the cost that they can fit under the salary cap, they can make it work this year. Why not at least run it back for one more year and then figure it out from there? So I honestly, like, I know we're never allowed to question the Chiefs because they've won back-to-back Super Bowls. I think this made the Chiefs weaker as a team. I think this was the wrong move for Kansas City to make. I think L'Jarius can still play at a high level. So I'm stunned.
So I can't get over the knees. I'll be honest with you. I mean, I think that what's going to happen is I think Sneed's going to play that first year, and then I think each year after that it's going to be risky. And I just can't. Here's what I can't get over, Fitz. All things considered, if Sneed's healthy, then Kansas City probably wants to keep Sneed, first and foremost. Secondly, let's say they can't afford him. Their owner's a total cheap ass. I don't know if you saw the article in The Athletic, but who was the linebacker that left that said, like, we're lucky when we get a T-shirt or a chair to sit on in the locker room? So, Willie Gay. So, when, you know, maybe the owner says, oh, well, we can't pay him and pay Chris Jones, fine. But still, good players, even if they're on the tag, go for more than a third in next year's draft. And then he goes for a third in next year's draft, and he gets all this guaranteed money. Something's not adding up. A.J. Brown had bad knees, and he got traded for a first and a third that day, much less, like, 2 years out. This is why it doesn't add up to me.
Well, and I think part of what we do have to acquiesce here is that the Chiefs are where they are because they have a great quarterback, yes, but also because they've done a great job of talent recognition and talent development. We know that. They've drafted really well for the most part. We know that. The Chiefs are a well-run organization, not well-owned, but well-run organization from football minds. So the question is, do you believe that Rand Carthon got one over on the Chiefs? And that would take a lot of benefit of the doubt, and I think the Chiefs have earned some benefit of the doubt. So the question is, what do the Chiefs know that we don't, that they're willing to let him walk? And even the aspect of, as you talk about, like, the guaranteed money, and as you talk about the knees and all of that, like, if you are, what I can't make sense is that the Chiefs didn't have to do anything right now for 1 year. So for them to be comfortable letting that, like, either he was being such a cancer about not getting the paycheck and you just want to let him walk because of that, or you know something, it just doesn't make a ton of sense. But if you're the Titans, like, are you willing to, and this is where it becomes interesting, because I think the Titans have done a nice job of building a roster around Will Levis as a whole that they think is going to make them more competitive, the luxury you get under a rookie contract. But I also think it's fair to look at the money you're spending just because, like, if you're sitting here renovating a house, just because you suddenly get a check from your mortgage lender for $500,000 to renovate your house, doesn't mean that that money is not poorly spent if you put it in the basement instead of the kitchen, right? Like, you got to make sure that you're spending money on the right things just because you have the money to spend. Does L'Jarius Sneed make the Titans 3 or 4 wins better? Man, that's a hard answer for me. And the amount of money they're giving him over the next few years, I mean, it's hard. But also, you acquire a good player, a great player at times. So, you know, it's a little bit of a, you got to trust your analysis versus the Chiefs' analysis. The Chiefs had him in the room, and we both know this, man. If a team that's had him in the room lets him go 99% of the time, there's a reason why.
Yeah, Jason Fitz is with us on the program. Calvin Ridley, Tony Pollard, Lloyd Cushenberry, L'Jarius Sneed, Kenneth Murray, Chidobe Awuzie. Are the Titans rebuilding, or are they going for it?
I think they're going. So this is an interesting – I love the way you phrased that question. I think the rebuild concept has changed a little bit in the NFL. And so teams don't want to suck all the way unless they're trying to suck for one player in particular. So I think what we see a lot of times is like a 2 to 3 year rebuild where you trust that you're going to be able to get talent second, third, fourth round, but you bring in people that can help you in the right now at least remain competitive. It feels like that's a little what they're doing. I disagree wholeheartedly with many people in the national media that have questioned the spending because, to me, like, what else are you going to do? Like, look, if you believe that your team needs, let's say, just as a general number, if you believe your team needs 12 new starters to be competitive at the highest level, you got to ask yourself, how many years does it take to find 12 new starters in the draft? 3, at least, if you hit home runs in 3 consecutive drafts? Yeah, I mean, so, like, at some point, you gotta try and just get better the way you can get better. So I think what the Titans are doing in that sense is actually smart. They're spending money to be better today, and then they're going to trust their draft process to augment that while they move along. I, I think it's a smart strategy as long as they believe Will Levis can play. And that's like, do they believe this is the question that you guys know the answer to? I think the fair question is Will Levis better than the fourth or fifth best quarterback in this year's draft? And I think the answer to that is probably yes. So they're banking on that and they're taking the flyer on it. So the only thing that stinks is I think that they're good enough, realistically, that they're going to win enough games that they won't be picking in the top 10 anytime soon. So you better be sure of that answer at some level, because it's not going to be as easy to acquire a quarterback in 1, 2, or 3 years as it is right now where they pick. So they've given us the answer to that. They're going all in.
Jason Fitz is with us. Are you buying the smoke that even though they don't have any receivers, that Jim Harbaugh may draft Joe Alt with the fifth pick?
Yeah, I am 100%. And people I've talked to around the league buy that 100%. Like, Harbaugh loves an offensive line. And Joe Alt is right. We talked about Joe last week, right? Like, so I think Joe is one of those guys that, man, he's plug and play. And in some years, he would actually be the first overall pick in the draft. That's how good he is to the fat guys that I've talked to that have broken him down. So, yeah, I think Joe Alt is can't miss. And look, I know they need receivers, but we talk about receivers every single year. Last year was a little bit of a down year, but we talk about receivers every single year. And realistically, if you want to look across the NFL last year, I think the biggest problem teams had is there are not 32 caliber starting tackles in the league, right? So what are you going to do? Where are you going to get one? Joe Alt can be that right out of the gate. Easier to find another wide receiver next year than it is to find another Joe Alt. I think, frankly, the Chargers would be dumb not to take Joe Alt at 5.
Okay, then with that being said, do you, A, buy the J.J. McCarthy smoke into the top 4, and what does that mean for Marvin Jr.?
Yeah, no, I think I am at this point, based on the people I've talked to and just my own brain, I'm not going to say that I'm reporting anything beautiful here. I would be stunned if quarterbacks don't go 1, 2, 3, and 4. I think Arizona's going to move down. But I don't think Arizona wants to move far enough down to not get one of the top 2 wide receivers in this year's draft. So if the Giants are legitimately looking at a quarterback and everything points to they are, the Giants are a sweet spot to move up from 6 to 4. The Cardinals move down to 6. They will sit there and they will take the top wide receiver. I think they'll have a shot at Marvin Harrison Jr. at 6, which is alarming to say because he is truly, in everybody's mind, the best wide receiver prospect we've seen in a very long time. So that leaves the Titans at 7 with the option of either the second best receiver, which doesn't seem to make sense, or the second best offensive lineman. So, you know, whatever your flavor of ice cream is on that, whether you want somebody like Fuaga, that, you know, I've talked to two.
But would you argue that Malik Nabers is probably a more elite player than, say, J.C. Latham or Fuaga or Fashanu?
Yes. I think Malik Nabers is more of a day one difference maker than any of those linemen you just mentioned. If I'm the Titans, by the way, and the line is where I want to go at 7, I'm not sure I don't trade down because, you know, two guys I talked to last week told me that Bo Nix won't be available by 12. So what happens at 7 is, and look, I'm not saying this from my standpoint. I don't understand the Bo Nix thing. But two guys I talked to that are very smart told me last week that teams are much higher on the Bo Nix than any of us realize. So if I'm to believe that, then that means Bo's not going to make it to 12 to Denver. So that means Minnesota, somebody like that is going to try and move up. If I'm the Titans, I would gladly move down to 11, 12, 13, if that means that 11, 12, or 13 can get their quarterback, and I'll still have a shot at one of those offensive linemen if Joe Alt's not on the board. If Alt's on the board, it's stupid to trade down.
Jason Fitz, as always, joining us on the program. Fitz, great stuff. Appreciate you, bud.
Appreciate you, brother. Thanks, man.
Yep, Jason Fitz, as always. He's buying the Harbaugh smoke. He's buying the Harbaugh smoke. I think what we're going to do, I have a theory on this Harbaugh smoke. We'll do this next. Stillman & Company and your phones, 1025-1063. The game, FanDuel Sportsbook is my official sportsbook app. That's right. I love FanDuel Sportsbook. Say goodbye to busted brackets because FanDuel lets you bet on every game of the tournament. So whether you're betting on a big upset or a one seed, it's time to go dancing on America's number one sportsbook. And right now, new customers get $200 in bonus bets if your first $5 bet wins. So many games in the Sweet 16 to pick from. And it looks like the favorites outside of Kentucky have kind of had their way as far as the tournament's been concerned. So I would be looking at the favorites. That's $200 to use on point spreads, money lines, and you can pick who's going to win it all. Just visit FanDuel.com/JGM and bet on college hoops until they cut down the net. 21 and over in present Tennessee. First online real money wager. Only $10 first deposit is required. Bonus issued is non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call the Tennessee Red Line at 1-800-889-9789.
Yeah, I mean, the offensive line to me is important. I mean, if I asked you the question of, like, what – position group depends on no other position group to be good. But every other position group depends on them to be good. You know, what position group is that? Offensive line. They're not relying on any other position group to be good. They go out and they're good. But yet every other position group relies on the offensive line to be good. And then the D-line, they'll like they'll be the ones that argue back. Ah, we don't, you know, we don't need the offensive line to be good. Do you? Do you like when the offense has a 12-play drive and you know the field position? Yeah. Oh yeah. Okay. You're right. You know, it's like so. Yeah. That building that you know building that you know kind of offensive line, that's exciting. Yeah. You know, can't wait to do that.
Jim Harbaugh, and I asked Fitz in the last segment, I said, Fitz, are you buying the smoke that even though they don't have any receivers, they got Josh Palmer, who's a three, and they got Quentin Johnston, who's a bust. Are you buying that they could still take Joe Alt with the fifth overall pick? And Fitz said, absolutely. So we are, I believe, 28 days away from the NFL draft. It is on Thursday, April 25th. Should be able to remember that. It's my sister's birthday. But Max always tells me every day I need to remind people when the draft is because he doesn't know when it is, even though he's got a cell phone and he can just Google it himself. But again, we're 28 days away. I think if Joe Walt's there at 7, you take him. End of story. I think everything else is what we need to be worried about for the next 28 days. Is what, if not Joe Walt, then what? That, and if I were the Titans, that would be what I'm worried about. And I would sign at least one tackle who's a Dennis Kelly-type tackle to come in here just in case I don't get my tackle and I end up taking Malik Nabers or Marvin Harrison Jr. Jared versus Joe is next. And boy, do we have a lot to yell and scream about, and we'll do that next. Stillman & Company, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.